Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Michael Brenner, a professor emeritus of international affairs at the University of Pittsburgh and a senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and a contributor to research and consulting projects on Euro-American security and economic issues. A consultant to the United States Department of Defense and Department of State. He is the author of numerous books, including Towards a More Independent Europe. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Brenner.
A pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you, Michael. And let me quote a very poignant and rather topical statement that was made this week, which sort of, I think, highlights what's happening in our political zeitgeist, if you will. Let me quote it. If the campaign of incitement and vilification against anyone who disagrees with your views does not stop, blood will be spilled here. There is a deep division, and you, elected leaders, have the power to end it. Now, one would think that that might have been a statement addressed to President Trump, but in fact, it was a statement addressed to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who was in attendance at the anniversary of the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. And the words that I just quoted came from Noah Rotman, his granddaughter. She was speaking at the state memorial ceremony on the 23rd anniversary of the assassination. So I'm sure since you've spent a lot of time in Pittsburgh, you're also very much affected by what happened on Squirrel Hill.
Yes, I would pass the synagogue on the drive from my home to the university just about every day. And I think I know one or two people who sort of occasionally would attend services there.
Well, of course, when the president arrived for his photo opportunity at the synagogue, the first person to greet him as he got out of the limousine was Ron Dermer, Israel's ambassador to the United States. So it's a bit of an irony that the congregants who were murdered and those who attend that synagogue, and the synagogue itself is, according to Israeli chief rabbis, is not a real synagogue, and the congregants, including those who were murdered, aren't real Jews.
Well, there are 2 points that are noteworthy. Unfortunately, we reached a pass in this country where even the sort of most tragic event very quickly sort of turns into fodder for demagogic politicos, with sort of President Trump at the top of the list. President Trump is a clinical narcissist, and a feature of that psychological syndrome is a complete inability to empathize with anyone, with other person, whatever the circumstances. So he's totally insensitive to that, just as insensitive to the fact that the political leaders of the community in the city of Pittsburgh, and most of them at least, decided that he was unwelcome and they would not be there to receive him. So instead, you get the Israeli ambassador in Washington, just as cynical as the president, or I should say even more cynical, since he's not a clinical narcissist, which is a psychopathic condition, to exploit and to use whatever happens to Jews anywhere in the world to foster the current Israeli government's radical view of sort of how to deal with our enemies. And those enemies are not really the radical right in the United States. The enemies that they see them are anyone who expresses any sympathy for the plight of the Palestinians. On the question of the status of Jews, well, this has been an issue going back to the founding of the Jewish state, insofar as the Orthodox, the very Orthodox religious establishment in Israel, made a deal early on that they would sort of support the secular state, and the Zionists were secularists, in exchange for certain privileges, and those are privileges including authority to make determinations like that on marriage and who is a Jew and who isn't. And this is historically unprecedented since the Jewish religion has never had any kind of official establishment. And most American Jews don't agree with it. Most American Jews identify, whether institutionally or otherwise, with the more liberal, called conservative, but by general standards, more liberal, conservative or reform congregations. But this is politics. It has nothing to do with religion, has nothing to do with spiritual values, has nothing to do with the great humanist tradition going back two millennia associated with the Jewish diaspora, which the current Israeli regime is in the process of undermining, if not bringing an end to.
The historian John Meacham described Trump as a combination of narcissism, nationalism, and nastiness. But let's turn a little bit to today. The president tried to throw a bone to his base. He's sort of ginning up all kinds of paranoia over this caravan coming up from Central America. He's been lying through his teeth about offering a middle-class tax cut and dealing with pre-existing conditions and just throwing anything at the wall. But the latest thing he threw at the wall today is that he alone can end birthright citizenship with an executive order. But while all of this is going on, isn't it pretty clear?
This is an absolute untruth.
Yeah.
The Constitution of the United States is incorporated as expressed in the 14th Amendment. Stipulates very clearly that if you are born in the United States, you not only have a right to citizenship, you automatically become a citizenship. So it would take a constitutional amendment to change that. The president, in this case Donald Trump, has no authority whatsoever via an executive order or any other action to alter that. And even a court sympathetic to Trumpism would never sort of consider such an action as to be legal and constitutional. What he's doing, as you say, he's trying to sort of generate an atmosphere of fear and hate, and to play to his base and to bringing out as large a vote as he could. The sad thing is that base really is only, somewhere between 12, 18, max 20% of the population and the electorate. The rest of his support, as was the case in 2016, simply comes from Republicans who don't necessarily share those views, but see Trump and the phenomenon he represents and the Tea Party mentality as, the kinds of shock troops who will bring to power people who will support their traditional agenda, which is tax benefits for the rich, cosseting, business, and particularly the financial sector, reducing spending on all manner of social programs, and in effect bringing back the United States to the 1920s, if not into the 1890s. And so what we have is, even adding that group, you don't have a majority, but the overwhelming and central fact of American politics today, that all of the will and the energy is at the right end, on the far right end of the political spectrum. I mean, the Democrat Party generally not only has compromised enormously on their sort of fundamental values and principles, which they've abandoned over the last generation or so, but they're totally inept as an opposition in many places, and even on many flagrant issues, they simply don't exist. You don't see them on the talk shows. They don't go to a microphone. They don't get quoted in the release, news releases by the press agencies. They're meek, they're timid, they believe that simply good-heartedness and good attentions alone will be sad, and a collapse, in, you know, an implosion of the Trump presidency will bring them back to power. It won't. And that is really the ultimate tragedy of this current era in American politics.
Well, clearly, President Trump is skillful at the politics of distraction and government by stunt. But I think you would agree with me, Michael Brenner, that these pipe bombings and this massacre have taken the Saudi Arabian story off the headlines. And I'm sure that's pretty welcome at the White House, wouldn't you think?
Yes, I guess so. In a sense, it might really relieve some of the popular pressure in the United States to reconsider the blank check the United States has given to Mohammed bin Salman. You know, Trump's sort of, you know, brother in autocracy, if you like. But it was predictable that that matter would be buried down the memory hole pretty quickly anyway, because the main line of confrontation there is between Mohammed bin Salman and Erdogan in Turkey. And Erdogan, who does, I am told by confidently reliable sources, does indeed have those tapes, which demonstrate not only the barbaric murder that occurred in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, but the direct orders given by Mohammed bin Salman. And so, in effect, he's blackmailing bin Salman, and he wants three things. A lot of money, because Turkey is running serious balance of payments deficits, and their currency is under threat. Two, he wants the Saudis to cease all support for the Kurdish opposition to his regime, not only the Kurds in Turkey, but especially the Kurds, whom the U.S. as well has been backing in northeastern Syria. And three, he wants Saudis to withdraw, in effect, their excommunication of Qatar, the other very wealthy Gulf principality that's been an ally of Turkey and provided vital financial support, and which Mohammed bin Salman has been trying to break. And so those are Erdogan's three demands, and as soon as they are satisfactorily met, the tape will disappear in the vaults of the Turkish authorities. Washington will breathe a sigh of relief, and everybody will forget about it.
Indeed. I understand that on the tape they actually have Mohammed bin Salman himself yelling at his aide while they are torturing Khashoggi.
That apparently is correct.
But he yells out, apparently, on the phone, "Bring me the head of the dog." And apparently,
well, Mohammed bin Salman himself is unhinged.
Yeah.
Whether he's a psychopath by clinical criteria, I don't know. I don't have the qualifications to judge that. Yeah. But he is unhinged. And so, you know, looked at in a global perspective, we have this sort of bizarre situation where in the most combustible region of the world, the Middle East, most of the parties involved are being directed by people, they all happen to be men at the present time, whose minds are off the rails. That includes Donald Trump, Mohammed bin Salman. Erdogan himself is an egomaniac who's begun to do some quite sort of irrational things, as well as the head of ISIL. Israel, for its part, you know, has a leader and a coterie of people who are drunk with power, intoxicated by the fact that they have in fact turned the strongest power in the world, the United States, into their political instrument. And so that's you know, a very dangerous and very unhealthy situation. Fortunately, we have a few people and players in the game of sound mind and prudent judgment, and one of them, of course, is Vladimir Putin, and another is Prime Minister Xi of China. We posit them as enemy threats to global peace, in Hillary Clinton's terms, Putin's a new Hitler, but one can argue on objective grounds that we should rely more on them to prevent a cataclysm than on our own president.
Well, on that note, Michael Brenner, we're going to have to do a follow-up conversation, but I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks again, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Michael Brenner, who's Professor Emeritus of International Affairs at the University of Pittsburgh, a senior fellow at the Center for Transatlantic Relations at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and a contributor to research and consulting projects on Euro-American security and economic issues. He's a consultant to the United States Department of Defense and State, and he is the author of numerous books, including most recently, Towards a More Independent Europe. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.